Welcome to Steppin' Out, the 12-step meeting on the air. Tonight you'll meet real people with true stories of addiction and recovery. And now, Steppin' Out.
What are the characteristics of sex and love addiction? Hello, my name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out. Over the next hour, we're going to be covering topics regarding sex and love addiction in a way that few people can relate to. Most people don't get addicted to people. You know, week in and week out, we talk about drug addiction, we talk about alcoholism, we talk about food addiction, but this is a really interesting thing. Dave, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well.
I want to welcome you to the show. We have our friends Dave and Barbara here tonight to talk to us about SLAA as a fellowship and also just about what their personal experiences were like, you know, before recovery and today. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, where it all starts for you. You know, maybe as a child, what was it like? Did you feel different as a kid?
Not at all. I grew up in the suburbs of New York City.
Okay.
I come from a family of, I don't remember clearly any, there's no abuse.
Nothing crazy like that?
No abuse.
Okay.
Parents are married 50 years.
Wow. So you had a good stable relationship as a role model there, right? I mean.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll talk about, I had a very critical father, which I think led to some of my issues in life.
But, sure.
Other than that, I don't know what led to, I'm still working on
okay.
what led to my behavior.
No worries. You know, backing up as a child, though, I mean, did you said you really don't recall feeling any differently. You don't really recall, it seemed like everything, you know, growing up was fairly normal, you know, as best you can describe.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I came from, you know, upper middle class home.
Okay.
High achieving, family of high achievers.
But you talked about that hyper kind of critical aspect
right.
of your dad. You know, maybe talk to us a little bit about like what was that like as a child?
It wasn't easy.
Okay.
It wasn't easy. School was always the priority. Doing your work. I was a very good athlete. And what I think I've learned in recovery is this need for perfectionism.
Okay.
Which certainly has caused me problems in my life.
Huh.
And has led to my love addiction.
Okay. Does this boil down to some sort of need for some kind of control? Or, I mean, what do you think it is?
I've always needed control.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted control. I always felt like my father had the control. I have a pattern in my life where these women that I choose the ones that I really want in my life, they have control of me.
Ah, okay.
The ones that I could have and choose not to be with, I have the control.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're attracted to women who are, I guess, you're attracted to the chaos, it sounds like.
I'm attracted to perhaps what I can't have.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like the unattainable is what's attractive to you.
The trouble is that when a particular woman, there have been about four experiences over the 20 years of dating that have caused me trouble. It's when I didn't have the control, these women. In my mind, the little people in my head said they're perfect. So it goes back to a particular type of woman, my perfectionism,
mm-hmm.
and control, and trying to gain control where perhaps I could never have it with these women.
Do you remember the first girl you asked out?
Absolutely.
What was she like?
I don't know if I was. I think it was a little later in high school when I started getting involved with women. I was more focused on being an athlete. I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
The five women that have caused me trouble, that have made me into the love addict that I am, I couldn't believe that they wanted me. I couldn't believe.
I mean, why? I mean, the radio. You were on the radio, so no one could see. You're a good-looking
sure.
dude. I mean, what was the problem? What happened? Why would you think that?
I don't know. I sit here today after 2.5 years in recovery programs, and I can't get enough I can't get enough attention. I can't get enough adoration. Certainly self-esteem comes into it.
Yeah.
But it's never enough.
Is this going back to your dad just kind of kicking you down, saying, hey, man, it's not good enough? Or what's this all about?
Possibly.
Yeah, I mean,
very, very likely it is.
Because, I mean, the bar is insanely high for you as a kid.
The bar is insanely high. I was the captain of my hockey team in high school. I was a good student. I went to an Ivy League school, and
it sounds pretty good to me, man. You know, like,
and yet, in this area with women, there's a particular type of woman. The four or five women in my life that have just thrown me.
Well, get back to woman number
sure.
one, the one I asked you about in the first place. Do you remember
sure.
that first one? And
what
personality type was she? Was she the one that you could or could not control?
She was. I was the star athlete in high school, and. There were a lot of other women interested in me, and I chose her. She was tomboyish. She wasn't really my type, but it was there was something there.
What was it?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. That's, you know, it's 22 years ago.
Yeah.
22 years ago, and my mind works. I wanted her. It didn't matter. It's not what my friends told me. My friends always told me, take advantage of all the women.
Yeah.
I'm not a sex addict. I've never been. I never dated more than one woman at a time. She wasn't a very popular woman in a girl in high school. I had to have her.
Okay.
And she wasn't in demand.
Okay.
I'm not sure what it was about her.
Was it because maybe there was no threat?
It was new to me.
Okay.
It was new to me. And I had decided, as I have over the past 22 years, that I wanted her. She represented to me, as the other women I will talk about, she represented to me perfection at the time.
Mm.
And since I, as a perfectionist, will never be able to attain that, in retrospect, I see her flaws. I'm at times I look back and I say I was an idiot for not having taken advantage of other opportunities I had. But at the time, as an addict, I couldn't stop myself. I was with her. I wanted her. I would do anything to be with her.
So you'd get completely myopic. You would just focus in on this one woman.
Absolutely.
And nothing else mattered.
Nothing mattered, and I got into trouble. It was my first relationship with her. It was a 6-month relationship, a simple 6-month relationship in my junior year of high school. The school year ended, and I remember the longing over the summer. The longing. It's I'm fine when I'm with them, and when they're away, it could be an hour, it could be a day, it could be for the summer. I am lost. I wasn't connected.
Yeah.
You know, and it didn't help that when she came back for the beginning of my senior year of high school, you know, she started dating my best friend.
No, that don't help.
That doesn't. Not only does not help, but then I got into trouble. I started calling her home and bothering her and not being able to sit.
Yeah.
Handling this first rejection, and I have a life pattern of not being able to sit with a rejection. Accept the rejection and move on.
You know, it wasn't just about sex for you, though. That's the thing. It's interesting, Dave. You were talking more about love and trying. And it sounds like, I mean, I'll back you up a little bit. You had this really tough thing with your dad where your dad was always expected a lot from you. And you were a bit of a perfectionist yourself. And you would kind of pursue these, I guess, empty relationships, you know, not really finding what you were looking for in them. You know, is that a pretty accurate statement?
I didn't see them as empty.
No, not at the time.
Not at the time. It filled me up. It made me... here I was. I was a star athlete, good student.
Yeah,
came from a great family. Everybody was no divorce. No. I wasn't a sex addict. I decided that a particular woman would reflect well on me. Would make me whole.
Right.
It could give me something that I couldn't give myself, even if. You know, it seemed that I had everything.
Question number 10 off of the 40 questions off the SLAA website. Okay. Do you believe that someone can fix you? You know, that's a pretty interesting notion if you think about it. I mean, people as a drug, that's what we started the show off with. Did you believe that?
Well, if you ask me that for my 20-year pattern of picking a woman and believing that she was the answer, she would make me whole. I could walk down the street with her. She's the one that
she would complete
you. The beautiful one.
Yeah.
I always refer to myself as shallow.
Mm, why?
The beautiful one.
Why are you shallow?
I remember my first meeting in SLAA. I said, I only date beautiful women. I only date beautiful women. You know, and people were, they thought it was funny. In my mind, a beautiful woman, I don't know if it's what I deserve, but it's what I want.
Is it arm candy or is it something more than that?
It's not arm candy. I don't even like to go out that much. I like to know that a beautiful woman is interested in me and that I'm with her. And when I'm involved with her, I do whatever I have to do to maintain it. And in the four main relationships with quote unquote beautiful women in my life, when it ends, I am devastated.
Let's go back to relationship number two. We talked about the first one a little bit. She was pretty simple, and that was there was something very compelling to you about that, and you tried to kind of grasp her, and you know what happened next.
Well, I just like to finish up on girlfriend one, senior year of high school. I made phone calls after phone calls to bother her family until I couldn't get past her.
Mm.
I felt like people didn't understand how much, this could be the common, first love thing, love. I understand that. But I remember coming home from hockey practice one night and the police were at my parents' house. They had before caller ID and tracking.
No, that's stalking, man. That's not first
they
love
had,
kind of stuff. You know?
I was stalking her.
Yeah.
I was stalking her and it was embarrassing and I knew that,
no, that's a little more than just a high school crush.
It's a problem.
That's a problem.
It's a problem. And it's a problem that I've never had the police involved before.
Did you know that at the time that it wasn't right? Or were you kind of like, oh, this kind of happens? I mean, you can't sit there and slough it off and just be like, oh, this happens to everybody.
Well, I never thought of myself as an addict, certainly not at 17 years old.
Of course.
And to dial a telephone compulsively wasn't unique. As I've learned from being in 12-step rooms, 50-year-olds that can't get past a person dial compulsively.
Interesting.
Going on to so the police was certainly a wake-up call.
Right.
Second major relationship was a woman from high school that I wanted to be involved with since I was in seventh grade. I viewed her as an unreachable. But after it was during the 1984 Olympics, mm-hmm. we were at a party and we were on a couch and we walked home. I asked her out. I couldn't believe she said yes. We went to different colleges, and it fell apart and I was a mess.
Well, why would you expect it not to fall apart?
I couldn't believe I was with her, and that's the same.
So
feeling,
it's extreme high.
It's the extreme high and the extreme low.
And then the extreme low.
I'm black and white.
Right.
I couldn't believe. It was three months we were together and I went to college. Jumping ahead, I transferred to the school where she was already there and we continued our relationship and ended up living together for 2 years. She went to medical school. I went to law school. She met somebody in medical school and devastated again to the point where I'd show up at her medical school. I remember being in a restaurant with her once and I went in her pocketbook to see if there was another picture of a guy. I wanted to know if there's another guy. I couldn't believe I was being rejected by her. This woman that I desired since seventh grade and I was with her and I slept with her and I couldn't believe it. And it was over. And I need to mention that these relationships, not only the first two, but they led to I was a mess. And my parents over the years, over 20 years, have seen me on their couch like a baby. So sad and numb and unable to function. And it's led me into each relationship has led me into therapy.
Interesting.
Not other problems in life, but my problems with women and rejection and getting over them.
That second loss, that second relationship that didn't go the way you had hoped, what was the first thing that you thought after it was over?
I remember crying on the phone. I couldn't believe it. It's I believe she told me that there wasn't another guy. It's always the feeling of I'm not sure it's I had suicidal thoughts, but okay. I thought that for each one of these four women that I'm going to my timetable in life, I use not other events, but the women I've been involved with.
Right. Your whole chronology is based on on relationships.
It's based on these women.
Relationships.
It's not based on the fillers. I've dated other women. These are the women that I wanted. They were perfect.
Right.
And I couldn't believe it was over, and I'll never meet another woman like this again.
But these are there were women between the women, so to speak. Okay, but these are the ones that made the most of the largest impact.
These were the perfect ones. These are the ones that helped make that allowed me to fill the void, to make me feel that I was everything that everybody else told me I was that I couldn't absorb.
Right.
A good athlete, a good student, a good brother, a good son. No. I needed it from a woman, a beautiful woman.
Yeah. So the approval, it was an insatiable thirst for this approval.
And it and until recently, until the programs, and I've learned to take better care of myself, to learn how not to go there.
To how to do esteemable things.
To not give my power away.
There you go.
Away.
A couple of questions about the addiction of for sex and love addicts that we have here up on the website. I'm going to just go through them real quick.
Sure.
Do you ever get high from sex and or romance? Have you ever had sex at inappropriate times, in inappropriate places, or with inappropriate people? Have you ever felt that you've had to have sex? Do you believe that someone can fix you? And that seems to be the one, Dave, that seems to kind of be pretty close to your heart, no?
It certainly is.
You're talking about these women, and they were like the missing piece of the puzzle.
I don't know if they were going to fix me, but I felt like it was the last piece of the puzzle that I needed.
Yeah, like you were talking about this kind of big kind of hole in yourself that you kept looking to these women to kind of fill, and I think that sounds pretty damn accurate, you know?
Well,
based on what you're telling us.
After that, the woman I was just talking about, when it was just before law school,
mm-hmm.
and I was so devastated by the rejection that I went through all of law school. I certainly didn't have sex for those 3 years. And I wasn't really interested in dating,
mm-hmm.
because I put so much. I wasn't in program at the time. I was in such withdrawal that I would never find a woman like that again.
But that's the same thing you said about the other ones.
I said that again, and I got a couple more where that came from.
Yeah.
So we jump ahead,
all
and
right.
Here I am, a lawyer who is not practicing law, but I have this law degree. I have a master's degree. I have an Ivy League education, and several years out of law school, I met a woman who lived in my complex who wasn't high school educated, who thought I was this angel, this smart lawyer angel that could help her in life. She wasn't quite yet divorced. She had two children. What I was doing with her, you know, looking back, it seems like a very strange situation, but I got involved. I was going to be her savior.
Mm-hmm.
And what it did for me is, and I need to say that I graduated from law school, passed the bar in 1994, and it wasn't until this year that I started practicing law, because we talk about the timeline.
Yeah, what happened?
It's women. It's not a career. I would be involved with a woman for 2 years, 3 years. It would blow up. I'd be rejected, and then I wouldn't bounce to another woman. I would take a couple years off, and wonder and spend day after day thinking about the woman. Whereas people, my parents, move on to another person. Friends, you're an attractive guy. You're an attorney. Move to the next person. I couldn't get past these women.
You couldn't get unstuck.
I couldn't get past these women. And I would just take the time off and I would think about them. To this day, you know, for the a woman that helped me make the decision to get into recovery, it's about 900 days. I count days because I can't be involved with these people. I can't contact them anymore. And I really believe, even though with recovery, I know to not contact them.
900 days?
900 days.
Since?
Since it was 15 days into the when I got into the SLA program June 12th, 2003.
Okay.
15 days after that, I decided that the only way to deal with this final woman that I was love addicted to was no contact.
Well, talk to me about that.
Well, I'll talk to you about that. I this woman, I was a karate instructor.
Okay.
And as my mother always said, you know, get involved with activities. That's where you meet people. So I got involved with her.
Mm-hmm.
A beautiful woman that was. She happened to be living with someone else, but I overlooked that because I couldn't say no to the opportunity. So here I was, I'd go in there. I was a teacher, a black belt in karate. Here's a young student. I'm involved. It's the highest high because I'm looked up to and I'm involved with a cute student. And I was involved with, I don't necessarily know that if I ever wanted to be with her, but she lived with someone the whole time. I couldn't see her on weekends. I gave my power to her. She loved the fact that I was an attorney and I was smart, but I wasn't doing anything with this because I was so focused on maintaining. Why is she interested in me?
Mm.
It was a primarily sexual relationship. She would come over during the week. I could never see her on the weekends, and it would kill me on the weekends. I'd be in withdrawal every weekend. It lasted for about 10 or 11 months. And of course, I started to go to, another therapist after each one of these women I've discussed tonight.
Was the next one more perfect than the last? Or were they all,
they're all perfect at the time in my way. And I believe, and I still believe, even with 2.5 years in program, I still believe that that's what I want. That's what it takes for me to be turned on.
Okay.
I can't be turned on by just any woman. I'm always told by parents and friends or program friends that it goes back to perfectionism. Have lower, people aren't perfect. They're flawed. Maybe you'll get to know her. I want the beautiful woman that turns me on.
So here's the bottom line. I mean, you're grabbing these women or at least trying to. They're perfect in your mind. Then you're putting them in this on this pedestal from which, you're bound to fail at some point because the expectation is extremely high. Right.
Well, I learned that. And that's what.
But that's the destructive pattern. I mean, just over and over again. So it's you're just replacing the woman. And kind of going through the same deal. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. And in my mind, there are so few. I've had a 22-year history of dating.
Right.
And I've talked tonight about these four particular women.
But these all impacted you in such a way that, you still, in some way, you still hurt from it.
I still do hurt from it. And I still, to this day, maybe people out there can relate to this. When I go to my hometown and the first two women I spoke to are from that hometown, I won't go to certain places. I won't go past their houses. This is 22 years later, 15 years later.
Sure.
I can't do it because it brings up too much pain.
Sure.
It was the rejection. It was, I don't want to hear it. I'm 39 years old. I don't want to hear about these women. I don't want to hear, I've heard that the second one that I lived with in college has three children and lives in Atlanta. I don't want to know that.
Right.
I don't want to know that. But it wasn't until this last one, this woman that I met in karate, where it bordered on sex addiction also. I'm not only a love addict, but she would come over during work and she'd see me certain days, and she lived with somebody who gave her money that she often spent on me. It was sick in so many ways. That helped me get into the program. I was in therapy, and a very important thing to discuss, to tell those who are listening tonight, was that therapy alone, the one-on-one with a therapist didn't do it for me, couldn't do it for me. He didn't have the answers for me, why I suffered for 22 years. And he encouraged me to see if there were 12-step programs that addressed issues like this. And I remember going on the internet and I found the SLAA meeting.
And that would be www.slaafws.org.
That's the program. And it was a Friday meeting. There are a lot of programs in New York City. And I'm fortunate. The title was How to Become Unaddicted from a Person.
And that's how we started the show.
I walked in there on June 12th, 2003, and I walked in there in a church, Midtown Manhattan, with a bunch of scary people. They looked weird. I don't have the problems that these people have.
Sure.
And I've learned since then that I became very involved in the program. You know, if you're in a room with a lot of people as opposed to a therapist, your story's told. Other people are going through the same thing that you're going through.
And that was the difference between why you couldn't connect with a therapist and then why you, when you found people with similar experience, you knew you were in the right place.
I remember saying to my therapist, I was on antidepressant medication. I tried everything.
Mm-hmm.
And my, my sister's a psychiatrist, and I tried everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked for. He said, "What do you want? A morphine drip?" I was in such pain from these women. He said, "What do you want? A morphine drip?"
Wow.
I'll say, "Give me what you got."
We're talking about sex and love addiction, which has nothing to do with chemicals and everything to do with people. Yet the feelings and the drive for this drug, it's all the same. Am I right in saying that?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, what's the difference between you and a junkie?
I'm a junkie.
You are.
I am a junkie. I'm a recovering junkie.
You're a recovering junkie. Yeah. So the question I have for you, Dave, is like we were talking a little bit before about these women in your life, these key relationships along the way, and they're all perfect in some way. But that last one was it really hurt you. You know, there was something in that that got you to take action. But what to me, you're describing this woman who is she was completely unavailable. It didn't sound too perfect. Like, that was the question I had in my mind. Like, what was it that made her perfect to you?
I think her physical beauty, the way she carried herself. She spent a lot of money on me, which wasn't important to me.
Okay.
But it is something that you can get used to.
Wow.
Especially within a sexual relationship. It's just a lot of highs, all kinds of highs. I'll buy you things and have sex with you, and I'm beautiful.
Yeah, it doesn't suck.
It's hard to walk away from that.
Yeah, it's hard to walk away from, sure.
And what's interesting is that when I first got into the SLAA rooms, she wanted to continue. This is the first, the only of the four women I've spoken about tonight that wanted to continue the relationship. Because.
Why?
She lived with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And. She gave me crumbs. She maybe I was 10% of her life. She wanted it to continue. Whatever she got from me, she didn't want it to end. She was 95% of my life, and I was 10% of her life.
But that was okay for you.
It was okay for me until the pain too much.
That's
the pain was too much. I asked for a morphine drip. I found the rooms. 15 days into in the SLA rooms, I decided. The message in SLAA, one of the messages is get away from your poison. I'm sure that's with many
sure.
12-step programs. Get away from your poison. My poison was this woman.
Mm.
So I am a very disciplined person. Cold turkey. I cut off contact with her. And as I said, 900 days, I think, coming up next week. And people laugh at me for counting those days, but the minute you stop counting, you become vulnerable. We know we can slip. I don't want to slip. New York City is a big place. I don't go to places where I know she works. I changed my karate school.
Mm-hmm.
I changed my email address. These are tools of the program to get away. No contact. And it's not a joke because this is painful. And I got away.
What did they tell you to do aside from things? I mean, they say get away, but how do you get away? I mean, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is where's the boundary? How do you begin to have healthy relationships moving forward?
Well, I'm working on that, but I just want to make a point about this last woman.
Okay.
And when I entered the program, the first few months are just impossibly painful. The withdrawal is so painful. I found myself...
Describe it.
I find myself walking in at 6 o'clock every night. I went to meetings, and we're fortunate in New York City because there are so many meetings.
Okay.
I went to about 8 or 9 meetings a week for 8 months. I became very involved in doing service in the programs. I remember from the second meeting, I was the timekeeper. We have 3-minute chairs, and I'm the timekeeper because I needed to be involved. Because when you have when I'm in a love addicted relationship, my world is this woman, and I need to fill in the time.
Okay.
With other activities and other people, and in retrospect, it's really worked well because many of my good friends in life now are program people.
Describe that pain.
The pain is that I can't be alone. I can't go anywhere that she may be. I had to give up my activity. I was the karate instructor. Why did I have to leave the school? She's the new person. But I learned from program that don't be too proud. You know, I dropped it. I dropped karate. My mother's like, how can you give up karate? I gave up karate because there's a woman I was involved with that I can't handle.
And this was a healthy choice for you.
It's fine.
Right.
And the irony is 2 weeks ago, I've now started to go to karate again. Because I enjoy it, but I'm going across the river in New Jersey because I'm still afraid. Because I'm not, once an addict, always an addict.
Right.
I'll go back to her. If I saw her in class, I would be lured back. So I withstood 120 phone calls from her after I told her. And the program helped me not say, I can't believe, you know, you were involved with somebody. It taught me, I said, you're not the problem. I can't handle it.
Right.
And no one will have a problem with that kind of advice.
Sure.
Because I couldn't handle it. What's she going to say? You can handle me. You can. She didn't say that.
Well, because it's good for her.
So she called 120 times, and I withstood 120 phone calls, and I didn't call back. There would be times where I was at a 6 o'clock meeting. She'd get off of work. And just for the hit, I would put my cell phone on vibrate, and she'd call 6 or 7 times. And I would listen to the messages, but I never called back because that's my drug. My drug is that if I call her back, then she once again has the power, and I'll go back just like any other junkie to her, to the world of being a crumb in her life that she just wants to have sex with twice a week.
10% of her world.
And 10% of her world.
Now I'm going to take you back to the question I asked
you
before. What does the program teach you so that you may have a healthy relationship moving forward?
Well, first of all, the program, when you walk into the rooms, as I said earlier, it's a strange bunch. I don't want to be in a room with sex addicts.
Well, let's talk about that
right, for
a minute. You think about that scenario, and I'm thinking about what the listener might visualize. You go in there, it's a bunch of weirdos and perverts and all this other garbage, but that's not really what you found there, was it?
That's not the case, but I found here I am as an attorney from a family in the wealthier suburbs of New York,
yeah,
and I'm with people who... they're men, they're women, there's some people that are clean, there are people wearing nice suits.
Yeah, and it's no knock on SLAA. I mean, we try to spend a lot of energy on this show trying to destigmatize a lot of the perceptions that people have of different addicts and alcoholics. You know, everybody comes in from AA and they're like, well, I expected guys in trench coats and bums and that's not what they saw when they went to their first meeting. You know, they saw young professionals trying to get well. And I'm trying to get a visual for what that room was like for you and how scary was it to walk in. Were you the only man there?
I wasn't. Not only was I not the only man there, but I was among people who spoke my language, who couldn't get past people, who continued for years to try to get past people. Sometimes it was somebody that they met once or twice that they couldn't get out of their mind, we discuss fantasy. We discuss. Sure, there's people that have relationships with prostitutes and have all kinds of sex addiction. That suffer from sex addiction, but it spoke my language. Love addiction, getting past a person. A lot of people, lawyers, doctors, everybody's there. They spoke my language, and then it's a nice environment that it enabled me to be honest. And that's what the programs do. You're in a room, you're able to talk to people, because when you can't get past a woman when you're 39 years old, mom doesn't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah, sure.
My friends are tired of it. David, you had a woman, she had sex with you twice a week. How come you just didn't hang on to that? That's what we all dream about.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't handle that. I couldn't handle it. And I'm coming to a place where other people talk about not being able to handle this.
And it's okay.
Well, it's something, what distinguishes this from other addictions is that, first of all, we need relationships. I don't think we need alcohol. We don't need alcohol. We don't need drugs.
Mm-hmm. We need people.
We need relationships. Each other. And it's very difficult also because very often in these rooms, your drug is in the rooms with you.
Exactly.
Men and women together. And it's good to discuss. There's a lot to be learned there. People speak my language. And
you found the home.
And
Dave.
Appreciate it.
We appreciate it. Okay, thank you so much for being with us. Once again, you're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out.